Hi, this is Sherry Wooldridge, and this is FinOps Pod.
How do we start these again? It's been a month.
It's been a while.
Hi, stop talking. That's how we start. We don't talk over each other. I'll start. God, you're going to probably leave that, and it's going to make me sound so bossy.
No, I would never do that.
Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm
Joe Daly.
I didn't expect that. I don't know why I should have, but you scared the crap out of me. Okay. You're so mean. So, Joe, that's exactly how we do it. And this is FinOps Pod.
And this is FinOps Pod. Yay. Stacy.
Yeah.
It's been a very long time since we last recorded an intro for FinOps Pod.
It's been.
I mean, if you are in the future, hello, future, what's it like? Is it nice? And you're listening to previous episodes of FinOps Pod, you're not going to notice any gap in continuity. But if you're listening to this as they are released, you're like, what happened in the month of April? Why was there not much going on? And we were traveling. There's lots of events going on. And my recording bank kind of depleted. And I was like, oh, no.
I recorded something in April.
Yeah, well, we got the Amy Ashby preview.
I was going to just say, speak for yourself. You made me record something.
It's true. Yeah. But for real, we were doing a lot. We were in Amsterdam, which was so much fun.
It was a blast.
200 people at the most amazing venue I've ever been at for a FinOps event. Met a lot of folks there. Met a lot of people who are fans of the podcast.
I did tell you, I had several people come up to me and tell me how much they liked it. And then it was always makes me laugh because they're like, oh, I recognized your voice. I'm like, oh, I don't know if that's a good thing. But yeah, I had great feedback. What about you?
I mean, everyone tells you how much they love the podcast.
They do.
And then you tell me, that person over there likes it. And I'm like, oh, great. I wish they would tell me. But you know what? I was standing in line for some coffee and I was standing behind a guy named Holger. He's from Germany. And we struck up a conversation and he's like, oh, you have the podcast. I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I've listened to it. I'm like, really? He's like, I have some feedback for you. I said, okay. And he said, FinOps Pod, too much blah, blah, blah.
Is that just you and I with the blah, blah, blah? Or is
no,
that
actually, I think that's a 4-star review in Germany. I immediately burst out laughing because, yeah, I mean, it's accurate. There is a lot of blah, blah, blah. It's FinOps plus blah, blah, blah. That's what FinOps Pod is. And Holger's great. And he introduced me to Christian, his colleague, who I believe was the originator of the critique. And I got to hang out with them a lot. I thought they were hilarious.
So this one's dedicated to them.
Holger, this one goes out to Holger and Christian.
All these blah, blah, blahs are just for you. They're like, yeah, we're never listening again.
It was great. That was awesome. Then we were in Chicago for the Chicago Road Show, which was awesome. A really good time. Met a lot of fun people there. And then just recently in New York City for the New York City Road Show, yeah, where the audience refused to acknowledge that they had ever heard of FinOps Pod. And even Kate Ferguson, who's been on the podcast, and Hector Jr. Meneses Jr., was in the audience as well. And I looked at them. I said, hey, has anyone listened to the podcast? And Kate shyly half raises her hand, like she didn't want to be seen raising her hand. And then Hector just kind of looks at the ground.
You needed me there so people would say, hey, we love the podcast.
Exactly. But then I kind of gave the crowd a hard time. And at the end, you know what? No one wanted to admit it in front of the group that they listened, but every single one of them went up to me later and said, I'm a FinOptonaut.
And you mean a FinOpper?
Actually, one person did say they were a FinOpper. And I was like, oh, that's great.
They were probably the coolest person there.
It was good. I'm glad the podcast is reaching all of you and that you're enjoying it. If you enjoy it, you know, feel free to continue telling Stacy all the positive feedback.
You can tell me at FinOpsX. Just come up and tell me how much you like the podcast.
Just give me all your passive aggressive comments. I'll take those.
The funniest thing is I have the least amount to do with this at all. I show up. I don't even listen. I don't even listen to the interviews beforehand sometimes because they're not ready. So I just show up, do an intro, and peace out. I listen to them after they're published. But
fan favorite. Fan favorite. Stacey Case.
Stacey Case, fan favorite. Say hi at X.
Man who talks too much, Joe Daly.
Blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah. Hey, but speaking of, I did listen, because you got it to me, this interview yesterday. And it's phenomenal.
Thank you.
So excited. About, yeah, you're welcome. You deserve that. Both of you do. So Sherry Wooldridge is with us.
Yes.
And she's just great. I just really like Sherry in general, too. But I thought this conversation was spectacular. It's really touching on some real-time stuff, too, that's happening in her life.
Well, I mean, it was a bit nerve-wracking. Well, you reached out to me and said, hey, how about Sherry? And I said, yeah, that's...
Well, can I tell why I wanted to do Sherry?
Yes.
Because back in the day, years ago, when I worked at a platform, I ran and created all the training and learning development there. And Sherry was one of the first people that I feel like I connected with. So we met each other virtually just because I was training. And then I remember going to a reInvent and seeing her there. But even better, it was like one time when I was walking down the Las Vegas Strip, maybe trying to avoid people, and I see Sherry, and I just got really like super excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, Sherry, hi! And that was the moment for me, because we are actually away from the venue a little bit too. And to connect with her is the first time I ever really is like, this is a community of people. And then the FinOps Foundation and everything, and to see Sherry here still and part of this community. But it was that connection with Sherry that when the FinOps Foundation started, I had no doubt that what a great and amazing community this would be because of people like her. And she's had just a great, strong voice throughout the community, throughout her career. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I wanted Sherry on here. But things happen. Phenomenal. Yeah.
Things happen. I reached out. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we haven't had her on yet, because Sherry is opinionated. She's smart. She's experienced and successful. And we reached out, said, what do you want to talk about? And she was like, hey, I've been doing this for the most part single-handedly for 6 years now, and I want to share how to scale FinOps all by yourself. And people would love to hear that. That'd helpful. And 2 days before we recorded, she was impacted by a massive layoff at her company. So I talked with her. I said, do you still want to do it? And she still wanted to do it. And we talk about it. And she talks about how where she's at and still shares all of her experience, which is going to be incredibly valuable to you all. And also gives insight and some strength to those who are facing hard times in challenging economic conditions.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's a conversation. Then you walk away with so much hope and you realize this is such a great career path to be in too. In times like this, even though her job is made redundant, the grander scheme of things is so hopeful and enlightening. Not to mention, she's funny. I like that she drops a little Sherry trademark in there. She goes, I really should trademark this. I was laughing at that one. I was thinking, yeah, that's good. I like that one. Okay, it was such a good conversation. You don't dwell on the negative at all. She just fully commits to this conversation and talking about her experiences and what it's like to be a team of one. And I think so many people are going to relate to this. Just so many. So yeah, it's one of my favorites now. It's currently one of my favorites.
Well, with that, without further ado, here's Sherry. Sherry, you are one of the first FinOps practitioners I ever met in this industry.
Really?
Yeah, when I was at Cardinal Health and went to reInvent. So this probably was 2017, and 2016 was the first year I even...
18.
So it was 18?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because we weren't connecting as a group at that point.
No.
Right? It was like one person maybe in every company, not even in every company, one person in a scattering of companies were even considering this aspect of cloud.
Yeah.
So you are one of the longest tenured person in FinOps that I know. And we scheduled this interview about a month ago, and we were going to talk about how everything you've learned and how you scale FinOps kind of single-handedly at a corporation. But this week, a wrench has been thrown into plans, and we were talking about off recording, and you wanted to share a little bit about it.
Yeah, mostly to be encouraging. So I've been doing this since 2018, and just to set this landscape. So I work for 3M in the healthcare business group. So it's the software side of 3M. And we had started to move things into the cloud in 2017. We used the tooling of Cloudability at the time. They were not part of Apptio at the time. And it's all AWS, right? Moving into AWS. I'm now in my sixth year, and we put FinOps under a grouping within that healthcare business group that was meant to service other divisions. So FinOps was going to do not just the original software development team, but also other divisions in our healthcare portfolio that needed help in moving things to the cloud. And they decided to disband it this week. So I was notified on Tuesday that I no longer will have a job. It is the fifth time that it's the sixth time in my entire career that I have experienced a layoff. And every time I came back to something that I would say was more fun, not always more money, but sometimes it's kind of a hard way to get a promotion, but it did happen a couple of times. And it just made me stronger. To be fair, I also have a spouse that works too. And now that I'm older, I don't have any kids at home, so I don't really have to worry about the stress of that. But there is so much out there right now, Joe. Like, I'm going to take the summer off, but if I wanted to, I could hop back into it. I'm going to be a little picky, but yeah, that's what happened to me this week. And it was just totally coincidental that we scheduled. So
it was shocking to me. And actually, I reached out to you and I was angry.
You did.
I was angry. I was like, what are they thinking? Don't they know what they have? Oh. And that was the immediate reaction. But you were very calm and peaceful about it, saying, no, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. And for people who experience this, and because it's going to happen more and more, right? I mean, we know what else is going on out there. So just be assured there's another spot. And FinOps, to me, the fact that there's a FinOps Foundation, and this is a shameless plug for that, there's so much resource, people-wise, people like you and me, but even the job board and all that kind of stuff. There's no need to fear, really.
Yeah. Yeah. When you are ready to do your next thing, it's not going to be a problem. Yeah. It's not going to be a problem. So that's a wrench in the plan, but you're so calm and at peace about it. You're saying nice things. I don't know if I am as calm and peaceful as you. I'd probably be saying some pretty awful things that need to be edited out. But you honestly were... You were saying really lovely things about your past colleagues.
Oh my gosh, they're wonderful.
And the company.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a business decision. And a lot of times that's where you have to come down to understand it's a business decision. I mean, if it had been personal and I had been misbehaving, I would not have been rehired after each one of them. And as long as you're honest with yourself about that, you just have to understand it's usually not personal.
Right. And yeah. I'm seeing that a lot in the industry, unfortunately, this year.
Yeah.
And these aren't personal valuations at all. It's just unfortunate business decisions. And it's not often that they are able to use a scalpel to make these decisions. It's usually much more blunt instrument making these decisions. So with that, I think it's very brave of you to talk about that and let people know it's okay. Now, having said that, you have years of experience and success that you're able to pull off of. So tell how you started this as a single person and
grew into it. So first of all, let me just say leadership was pivotal, critical, I should say, in the success of the program. If it had just been me trying to push it through, I'm telling you, it would have been really difficult. But I can think of at least quickly three leaders that were so encouraging, gave me the tooling I need. Like I said, I had the analysis tool. I had the approval to do whatever I needed to do to get the word out. So I started in, first of all, learning the tooling very well and learning cloud. I certified as a practitioner, which forced me into studying, but I wouldn't necessarily say that was FinOps related. It's not really FinOps related, but it gave me the good landscape and talk the talk. And also I was in an environment around the engineers. So not only did I have leadership support, but I was in the trenches, literally in the bullpens with the engineering teams and the analysts and people that were actually using the cloud. I was kind of known for having these elongated conversations with people because we have engineers all over the world, basically. But the ones in Salt Lake City could overhear me, you know, in my cubicle having all these conversations with people about it. And I think they learned while I had these conversations. I know they did. In fact, people would tell me, oh, I didn't know that. Tell me more about that. So being embedded within the engineering community, I think, was really important. I'm not an engineer by education. I did take, I took Fortran when there were card readers. Okay. Gives you an idea. Do you even know what a card reader is, Joe?
Like,
never mind.
I understand the concept.
Anyway, so I did some work in development as a product analyst, and I could speak to them as someone who understands there's always a lead time for changing things. There's always testing that has to go. So I get that whole thing. But being embedded physically in that area was really helped a lot too. Today, with everybody working from home, that might be a lot more difficult. It would be difficult. Have you thought about that?
Yeah. When you were just talking about overhearing conversations, it's like, you know what? That's true. I remember the containers team going like, oh, there's Joe grumbling about labels. But that's how you just being in the room and just overhearing and absorbing things. And that gives that's you that context sometimes. Yeah, that's been interrupted.
The other thing that I'm just a really big believer in a positive relationship with everybody. I don't like to pit teams against each other just for the sake of trying to get something out of them. So I had a lot of positive relationships with these engineers that I had known for years. That helped too, believe me. But the other thing is I did that would be regardless of where you sat necessarily, or even the relationships, is I went on a campaign of every couple of weeks, I would send out a blast email. We had an AD group that was all people who had an AWS login. So it was really easy for me to get the word out to 900 people. And there were some people that were not AWS login people, like managers and maybe product owners and stuff that I kept track of who wanted to know this. And I would send out things like before holidays, hey, just like you'd turn off all your lights in your house before you head to the airport on vacation, don't you want to turn off the stuff that you don't need in the cloud? You know, so I tried to make it all very positive and not just demanding, but more of, look, this is, makes sense, right? You want to be a good corporate citizen. Those were taken pretty well. I would get nice feedback on that stuff. People appreciated understanding it because it was very new. A lot of these engineers came from non-cloud, of course. And so it was good reminders to them. And so that's the other thing I did was just, I had a communication cadence and a tone that was more carrots than sticks. In fact, I never used sticks as far as I can remember. It was always encouragement and, hey, this is what's going on and you need to fix it, but what can I do to help you? The other things that I did was we had these already set up in 3M, these forums where people could hop on every other week. And I was invited a couple of times. Usually it was technical people, but I was invited a couple of times to talk about FinOps and do a presentation. So I was doing my own PR while I was working with the tooling, while I was working with the engineers. And I just had to learn how to prioritize stuff that would hit the biggest dollar effect. So I worked a lot on, well, tagging. I mean, don't even get me started on tagging. There are so many things I would do differently, but what we did, well, at least we tagged. I mean, we have like, what was my latest number? Like 91% tagged of things that are taggable. And we spend millions in the cloud. Yeah,
that's realistically really good. Very good.
So we developed that culture. Yeah. But anyway, things like right sizing, I had to go for the top things that were causing the bells to go off and or working with top spending teams. And then as we went on, we were also looking at the teams that were generating the most revenue and we needed to watch the OI for that. So there were different ways to prioritize, but at least I could at some points prioritize. And that then fueled what things I purchased, you know, what discounts I purchased and what things I had to escalate, those kinds of things. It's about prioritization. It has to be in the beginning. If you have no staff, which I didn't, it's just me, you have to prioritize. Right.
I was just about to ask. And this was just you by yourself.
It was for the first couple of years. Yeah.
Wow.
I got somebody to help. After 2 years, I had contract workers that would help to pull together some data into spreadsheets to present to management. But it takes a while to bring somebody on board. At least at that time, there weren't a lot of people coming out of school that really understood enough about cloud to really help me in anything more than just getting communications organized, which was a help. It was a help. I don't want to say that wasn't.
But there's so many points you're making that we need to circle back and underline. But that is a huge one because you're absolutely right. I remember going into an Ohio State University classroom to talk about FinOps, and they didn't even understand cloud. They were like the concept of what do I care about a cloud or a data center?
That's where I put my pictures. And, what do you mean?
Yeah. But now, you know, you talking to folks like Kate Ferguson, Hector Meneses Jr., who were on the podcast and just started their careers, they're so much more educated about what's going on in the space. That's a huge benefit of where we're going. Huge sign of growth.
Yes, it is. Hopefully that'll be more. So I did eventually end up with more technical people to help. And it was somebody who loved doing side jobs. He's an engineer. He actually has a staff of his own, but he loved doing side jobs. And he was such a godsend that helped me to automate a few things. And so I borrowed him. But also alongside that, the security team caught the vision and started setting in a process to do automation of shutting down things that weren't tagged or identifying, you know, other things that they could do automation on in the R&D environments, ensuring that S3 buckets were gone after so many months or whatever. So again, not my staff, but I begged, borrowed, and stole from people that I knew understood the point very, very much. I did a presentation one time for TBM conference that was called It Takes a Village to Raise a Cloud. And I need to copyright that. It takes a village to raise a cloud. And it really is true. So I started realizing, I do need staff, but it's really important to still, in the beginning, have people in other parts of the business engaged in it. So it's not just me, right? It's not just my program. It's the whole company's program.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to own it. I mean, you know, somebody has to own it. And that was me. But having the help from the other teams was so invaluable. I mean, shout out to Alex and Rob Fuller. They work with me and they're just really helpful in that realm.
I think it's really interesting you mentioned the security team because we're kind of talking about this as a staff in the background, prepping for something and listening to you, kind of something came in my mind. So let
work it out.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see what your experience is on this.
Okay.
I believe it's kind of like an SAT question. I believe that good FinOps policy is good security policy. However, I do not believe it is equivalent that good security policy is good FinOps policy.
True. Yeah.
That's all I needed.
I said that before you could even get it out. Yeah. So again, talking about relationships throughout the landscape, if you will, we have this fabulous program that one of the women has been creating in 3M that's concerning risk and inventory. Fascinating what she's trying to push through. And she and I kind of made a pact that we were going to do this in tandem. So the whole company knew that the way that we were tagging was matching up with the way that the risk compliance inventory team was also looking at stuff. And we were aggregating things in the same way. We were staying in tune. But I always knew that security was more important and would always spend money to make us safe. So, yeah, I mean, to me, like, there's no question. If an engineering team said to me, we have to take care of our security issues in the next sprint, and we can't pay attention to your FinOps suggestion, I would totally understand. So you have to spend money in security that may blow the budget at some point. And as the FinOps person, you say, okay, that's an anomaly, that every dollar hopefully has a value, like we talk about in FinOps. It's a spike, but we have to have it. And we know that we're doing it. So,
yeah, I learned to be very careful and approach my conversations about logging very, very sensitively, because saying, y'all log too much is not a good argument.
Yeah, that's not the right answer usually. Yeah. But although it is sometimes too. But when it comes to security logging, that's, yeah, totally agree. So you won the argument.
I didn't put that equation necessarily together until listening to you. Now, I'm trying to highlight the lessons you've learned here. Like, you had executive buy-in.
Definitely.
You collaborated. And things that I wish I, like, I'm listening to you and like, wow, it could have been so much easier for me when I went to Nationwide had I followed these sort of things you did, and I totally blew over them. You used the AD list as your communication.
Yeah.
You said, hey, if you have a login, I'm going to communicate with you.
Yep.
You leveraged the pre-existing knowledge sharing sessions.
Yep.
Which I totally blew off. And you used a carrot and not a stick. And I would trick people with a carrot and then hit them over the head with it. And it sounds so simple when you explain it.
Yeah.
And but these are things that, look, I've started two FinOps teams and I overlooked a lot of these simple things. So I wanted to repeat that. You also said that you learned so much about tagging, and tagging is still one of the number one questions and challenges that new practitioners are facing. So what have been your lessons about tagging?
So I kind of inherited the beginnings of it. I had a lot of influence in it in the first year. And well, it's been an ongoing thing. But the wisdom of AWS at the time was to have some sort of an application ID. And one of the first things I did, and I had management approval and buy-in and help with this to push it, is I said, I am not, because it's just me, I am not going to go chasing all the versions of how you spell application ID. So it was a capital A, PPLICATION, capital I, capital D, no spaces. And people said, well, what does it matter? Right. You know, so I go out there in AWS and I look at the tagging stuff that, you know, AWS captures that in the console. And no lie, Joe, I bet there were 24 different ways that people had not only misspelled it, but miscapitalized and all that kind of stuff. And I finally just said, y'all have to do it or we're going to take it down. And that's when some of that got started, is the security team would take down anything that was not exactly what the key should have been.
Yeah. Case sensitive tag keys. I'm laughing because I'm like, oh my God. Yes. How many times people fat fingered a key and it's, oh yeah.
There's no excuse. We're all professionals. Spell it right. But if I'd thought about it, I would have just said APPID, you know, that would have been a lot easier. Right. Because even I misspell application every time I try to do a report, you know, so that's something. So make your tag keys easy to understand and to use, but also don't give in to having a variety of flavors. Now, like in Cloudability, I know you can pull different tags together and resolve to one that you want to report on. I get that, but I didn't want to do that. It was just me. I didn't have the time to hunt it down. That's one thing I did. The other thing is that we didn't really make those things that identified the workloads, in this case, application ID. We had others, but I'm just picking on this one because it's the main one. We didn't really make the value of that to mean something. So we started with 0-1, which was our first mistake. You should never have a zero at the beginning of a value if you want to be able to report on it in any text-based kind of thing or numeric kind of thing. So we started with 1 and basically just went for about 20 of them. And then we skipped to 100. And then we always were doing 3-digit ones. And the digits never meant anything. So when we came to that place in our connection to the business, I wasn't able to look at an application ID and know what team that belonged to. And I really wish we had. I wish we'd use alphanumeric characters that indicated who that was. Because then what we had to do is figure out a way to aggregate all those application IDs to roll them up into the way that we run our business with product families and ultimately into business units. And it just made it so much harder. So if I had to do it all over again, I would have totally changed that. But we also did product owner emails, and I was really strict about that too. It must be a 3M email, no group email, and an individual, a person, one person who's accountable for that thing. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be the engineer. That was a different tag. This was the person from a business level that was accountable for that. Had to be an email, could not be a group. We had another one that you could use a group. And that helped us a lot. That worked really well when we enforced it because we could figure out where the anomalies were coming from. We could figure out who to consult with them, to help them understand the bigger picture, whatever. We had like over 200 engineering teams. So this is not a small potatoes kind of thing. These were a lot of people involved in that. So that I think we did well. I would always encourage anybody starting off to have that kind of a thing.
Did you have challenges keeping that up to date if people changed jobs or,
yes,
or moved around?
Yes. And we're dealing with that right now. But the one of the ways that we're resolving it is not necessarily in the tagging at the moment. We're kind of in a state of flux right now, but that risk compliance team I told you about, they are demanding that every quarter it be certified throughout the company. Who owns that application ID? Right?
Love
so
it.
We have that backup if we need it. Now, I'm not pulling from that risk inventory and automatedly pushing it. I wish we were. That's something that was on my plate to do this year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. So that's really important. I mean, that was a coup when Joyce was able to get each one of those application IDs assigned to a person so that it only needs to be changed there. And then eventually we could find a way to change it in the tagging automatically.
Yeah, we did something very similar, but we leveraged, it wasn't exactly the CMDB. I forget. It's been long enough distance now that I forgot what it was called, but it was the software list inside the CMDB.
Yeah.
And yeah, we used that ID number. And people would always say, but CMDBs, they're not up to date. And I'm like, well, they're going to get up to date when I'm charging people based off it.
Right.
And it did. It works. Like chargeback helps CMDB accuracy, especially if you have security standing next to you and say you're going to certify your apps every quarter.
Right.
That's beautiful.
Every quarter she got that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite the undertaking.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So I have some questions. Obviously, no one will hold you to what you say, how you feel today in April, how you're going to feel later in the summer. But in your next sort of role, you've been a lone wolf, the lone FinOps wolf for a while. Do you want to continue on? Like, hey, I did this by myself before, I'll do it again. Or do you want a team this time?
Well, first of all, let me say that I did get to hire someone and then she left me after 8 months.
How could you, Haley? How could you?
Oh my gosh, I loved her. Funny thing about that, I never met her until she came to visit in Salt Lake in December. She and her husband were skiing out here. I had never met her in person. I mean, I talked to her every day. I had never, because she lives in Texas. But anyway, I thought that was funny. Yeah, so she's doing really well. Mm-hmm. She's somewhere else. But lone wolf, you know, my nirvana would be a company that is just like the greenfield, starting off and... Mm-hmm. They have a few people that are interested. Maybe it's not quite organized yet. And they have an analytics tool or they're ready to do an analytics tool. I'm a big believer in those. I just think that's in this day and age of limited technology resources in your own company. I think it makes sense to try to use somebody else's work if you can and pay for it. But anyway, that would be my nirvana. So I don't really want to be a lone wolf. I don't think that I mean, I could have been so much more effective if I had had a team the whole time. Mm-hmm. But beg, borrowing, and stealing as I did, I still made it work, even though they didn't work directly for me. But I would really, having a staff would be, that would be nirvana.
Be so much nicer. Yeah. I mean, you genuinely make it sound so easy. However, I want to emphasize how impressive your success has been as a lone wolf. Yes. Beg, borrowing, and stealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were talking, I was like, wait, you're still on your own? It is incredibly impressive.
Well, thank you.
The work that you've done and the knowledge that you've gained and shared with the community over the last 6 years.
I'm not done. I'm not done yet. I'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back. Finding new ways things are going to go wrong. That's why I like to tell people, you know, folks like us burned our hand on the stove so that you can find new ways to burn your hand on the stove. And
on that, I just wanted to take a quick diversion because I listened to Amy Ashby. She was talking about how she loved anomalies. You know, she loved to get behind them and figure. I love that. When I used to test software, I didn't have fun until I broke it. You know, I want to know why it's not working, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that really resonated with me. But all that to say that, stuff will go wrong all the time. I guess that's not the right adjective to use, wrong, but stuff will happen all the time that needs to be taken care of. It's never done. You get new teams, you get new software, you get new policies, you get new directives from leadership. It never ends. And it ends up affecting FinOps if you're in the cloud, of course.
Yeah.
So I think it's fun to find that kind of stuff. If you're not somebody who likes to do data research, you wouldn't like it.
And I asked Amy this because it was so funny. I'd never heard anyone say, oh, anomalies are my favorite thing.
Oh, I love it.
What was your favorite thing?
I really did like anomaly stuff too, but over time I learned it was not worth my time to check into every anomaly. I did anomaly discovery only under certain circumstances. It had to be more than 10% of the spend in the trending. It's just not worth my time at that, you know, unless it continues and they don't know about it. So there are some things that you have to do with that. But other than that, I just think I really enjoyed helping the engineering teams understand how they could do it better for the whole company and for their team. It was kind of became a game. You know, the people, I would send emails and, you know, I'm sure people were rolling their eyes, but they would participate in the conversations and I would just help them understand. And pretty soon people would start calling me before it even happened. And they'd say, hey, Sherry, this is what's going to happen. Do you have any thoughts on it? I just had a conversation with a team this week about it. They're moving into Redshift and they just wanted me to know it's going to go up sky high for a while. And I said, that's good to know. You're trying to move into that environment. That's good. So I think the relationships and the working out of the best scenario with the teams was really rewarding.
Perfect. Anything else you want to say as you're sitting where you're sitting right now?
I think, when you and I were kind of talking about this, that the tone was going to be for people who were starting off in this. And I think it's just, there needs to be no fear. You've got a whole community of people in FinOps Foundation. There's a whole community of people out there that are so willing to help that it just seems pointless to be afraid about it. Having said that, I can also tell you the first time I ever bought RIs, I was scared to death. I mean, like I cleaned off my entire desk. I got a cup of coffee. I sat in quiet. I just stared at the screen. I was scared to death. So I get that fear of, oh my gosh, I'm about to commit this company to millions of dollars or whatever you're purchasing. And FinOps can't really help you with that because they're not going to buy them for you. So you have to learn how to buy them yourself. But all the analysis that goes into that can be a little scary, but other people can help to do that. And I just think maintaining a positive attitude about it, with it being carrots to eat, not beat people over the head with, is really positive. So that's about it. No, actually, there is one other thing, because I did take notes on this, thinking about what I could say. One of them was to know your numbers cold. I think it's really important for you to know things like your daily spend, your spend per whatever, okay? Your compute versus your storage, those kinds of things. Took me a while to get there, but that has made a big difference in the way I'm able to help leadership to figure out what's going on and where they need to concentrate stuff on too. Yeah, know your numbers.
It gave you credibility.
It did.
They couldn't shake you. You knew your numbers.
It's really important. Awesome. I think that's really important. So that's what I'll end with.
That is Sherry Wooldridge, folks. I've known Sherry for years. She's always opinionated, always willing to speak up. And quite honestly, if I were in her scenario, I probably wouldn't have been in the mood to record an interview and share all that knowledge, at least not so soon. But that's not how Sherry is. Sherry's an incredibly positive person, very brave, and pretty inspiring. Thank you so much, Sherry. What you have contributed and what you've shared is invaluable. Thank you so much. More thank yous. Thank you all the listeners of the FinOps Pod, even the ones like Holger and Christian. I threw in some extra blahs for you, my friends. I appreciate all of you. Thank you so much for letting us know that you make this podcast part of your day. It's rewarding for us. Thank you to everyone who has come out to our events recently, the Amsterdam Community Day, Chicago Roadshow, New York City Roadshow. We've got the London Roadshow and the Stockholm Roadshow also coming up in May. Ruben will be there handling those. He's absolutely fantastic at hosting those events. For those of you who are in Amsterdam, you know that. And then I will see you in FinOps X. We'll all be there for FinOps X. I cannot wait. The Ballroom B Wolfpack will be in effect. So many great things are going on there. Chalk Talks, breakout sessions, a celebration on the USS Midway. A real aircraft carrier, folks. Wear sensible shoes because it's got like hooks and stuff to tie the planes down. No flip-flops. No flip-flops on the aircraft carrier. I cannot wait. Until then, folks, keep on FinOpsin'.